Oh, it looks, I guess that's it. That means we're on. I don't know if I can be heard or not. I can see that there is a Blog Talk is having a bad internet day. I'm trying to launch the chat room, and it's I'm just getting that little gear circle. It's not even the Mac beach ball. It's a little circle of nothing's going to happen. I don't think I can cancel it and try it again. It's just going to keep on circling. I will. Thanksgiving set. No, it's trying to sell me chat software now. Okay. Anyway, I'll just keep trying to launch it. There's a lot to talk about today, and I'm going to have a couple of special guests, I think. Certainly, we're going to have, Baron Bodice from Gates of Vienna is going to be calling in any time. And he has a lot of subjects that he wants to discuss. And as do I. The thing is, one of my plans, I always told myself if I ever had a show, that I would try to do the kind of news that that news won't carry, like all this sort of news which is completely Islam related. And that's always been my plan. You know, what's interesting is that with each passing day, news services seem to be skipping what's politically correct and what the narrative requires in terms of reporting on reporting on the actual reality of the world today. And they seem to be just actually starting to go for it. I mean, fearlessly. And I think it's a sea change, if I'm really understanding how to use that term. Big things are happening. I mean, these are monumental times. I'll come back to that in a minute. Today, of course, was Armistice Day and Remembrance Day, and thanks to a friend that called early enough in the morning, I managed to get up in time and get down there. I tend to work really late at all this stuff, and so sometimes it's not that easy to get up early. And I made it down there, and I have to say, first of all, it was a spectacularly beautiful day. It's got to have been 15 degrees, and there was no wind, so if you stood still in the sun, it was just magic. It's like one of those perfect days where you stand still and the sun is warm and the air is cool. And I think I was standing in a crowd of between 50 and 80,000 people in downtown Ottawa. And the respect and the appreciation that I saw for our armed forces was really, really wonderful. But you know, sensing my own reflected defiance, but I think that it was a much bigger crowd than usual because there was a sense of defiance in the air, that people were there because one of our own, who was there in a ceremonial role, who was with a C-8 or C-7 rifle unloaded, was guarding the cenotaph, which is a beautiful, huge sculpture right downtown in Ottawa, Elgin and Wellington near the Parliament buildings, and the soldier who'd been assigned to the ceremonial role of guarding it late last month was shot by a jihadi, what I call the B team, meaning these Muslims will get a convert and they'll give them all kinds of privilege. Like apparently he had a key to a mosque and he'd been living there. And which means that they'd really been working on this guy. The last 15 days before he did his attack, he was staying at a homeless shelter, trying to do dawah, telling everybody they had to pray 5 times a day because the end of the world was coming. And somehow managed to, this homeless shelter, somehow managed to get his hands on a 30-06, was it? Or a 30-30 lever action, I think it was. And went down to the memorial and shot one of the guards and then sprinted up the Parliament buildings. The week before that, of course, another attack was made on another one of our soldiers in Quebec, but by car. I think he hit two people and killed one, if memory serves. And these sorts of things are becoming so common and so fast, it's difficult to really remember all the details in perpetuity. So the defiance in the air and the fact that so many people showed up, even when there's not a single human being that was there that was above the age of 8. Not a single person who was at the cenotaph today. It hadn't occurred to them that it was a target-rich environment And it would have been, you know, that there was some likelihood of, even though the security was considerably increased, there were snipers on the roofs of buildings. Actually, if you go to my website, flytapestblog.com, you'll see a little video that I made. You'll see a couple little scenes where there's building tops and some snipers. And for the first time in my life, I saw police with full auto machine guns, with C7s and C8s, standing in the street. Quite a few of them, by the way. Now, I'm old enough to remember the War Measures Act when Trudeau was concerned about Quebec separatists, and they had blown up a couple of mailboxes, yeah? And they had kidnapped two people, I think Pierre Laporte and Pete Rose, or am I confusing him with a baseball player? Pierre Laporte, and I think his last name was Rose. I don't think it was Pete. My apologies. I believe Mr. Rose was killed, actually, by Quebec separatists. And Pierre Trudeau called the War Measures Act, and I remember seeing armed soldiers in the streets of Canada for some time while what was called the FLQ crisis was being sorted out. This actually brings me to a fairly important discussion, which I think is taking place across talk radio and across news stations all over Canada. And I think this can be sorted out quickly. The issue is whether or not we allow these police to become militarized, which is clearly what's taking place. You can see these officers with C7s and C8s, and you're seeing new powers being granted by the federal government in the interest of fighting terrorism, while simultaneously that same federal government is letting in hundreds of thousands more Muslims from Muslim countries. You know, the thing of it is, if Pierre Trudeau was justified in calling the War Measures Act then we're considerably more justified by the same criteria and by any interpretation of that criteria to do so now. Now, the other night on talk radio, CFRA in Ottawa, one of my favorite shows, the host was saying that they should let, and it's a common thought, that they should let soldiers who are guarding the cenotaph have bullets because they're standing there with C7s and C8s ceremonially guarding the cenotaph, you know? And I can understand why they would feel that way. I personally think the most dangerous thing you can do with yourself is to stand around in public with an unloaded gun that everybody can see. And if they know it or don't know it's unloaded, either way, it's profoundly dangerous, you know, because they'll act on the assumption that it is and maybe try to get you in advance, or they'll act on the assumption that it isn't and shoot you knowing you can't do anything about it. I like what G. Gordon Liddy said about it. He said, you should always treat a gun as if it's loaded, so mine always are. I think G. Gordon Liddy was right on that. But that's actually not the point. The fact is that I think I really like the Harper government in Canada, and I say from the bottom of my heart, I think it may be the best government on this issue, the issue of Islamic terrorism and of Islamic infiltration and the threat that Islam and Islamic teachings presents to the Western world. I think that the Harper government, whatever they may be on different issues, and many people don't like them, but whatever they are on different issues, on this issue they are probably the best in terms of their understanding of the situation and what they're doing in terms of the intelligence and policies and so on, and especially what they're saying in public. You hear what Harper says when he speaks, and he gives interviews, and he's very straightforward and very clear about it, more so certainly than the United States, and 100 times more than England, which is clownish, and it's apologetics when it claims that Islamic terror attacks are actually, those people are enemies of Islam or something. I forget what it was, but it was clownishly, buffoonishly wrong and pathetic, and anybody could see it. It must be difficult to be the Prime Minister of England and work so hard to destroy any respect you might have. Having said all that, I think Harper is wrong to take this police, law and order approach to the problem. I think if Trudeau was justified in calling the War Measures Act during the FLQ crisis, well, I think we can look at what's happened in Canada. Now, this is something, I'm going to say something which doesn't get said enough, and it's, I think it's, personally, I think it's very important. That is, that when people look at terrorist attacks, they're only looking at the ones that are successful. So we're looking at this attack by the B team, again, a convert who they wound up and sent off. The A team is coming. The A team are the jihadis that are properly trained, and they know what their martyrdom is worth. I use that term in the most cynical possible way, as do Muslims, meaning they get killed in not because they're sacrificing themselves for the betterment of others, but they get killed in the process of murdering as many others as possible. The A team is in place here in Canada, and they're just waiting for the signal. It'll be sometime in 2015. I think everybody at this point knows it. So yes, we've seen a couple of B team jihadis succeed, and we've seen a few A team guys that are actually have been rounded up and arrested, and some have been already tried and convicted, and are facing centuries of jail time. Some just like 20 or 25 years. So when you're doing the calculation about the severity of the problem, I think most people utterly fail to look at the people that didn't make the cut, had been planning a serious jihadi attack and had been arrested in advance of that. And I think that it's an incredible error in judgment to not factor that into our personal calculations. Now, I think government does factor it in. But remember, public sentiment, the public feeling about all this is an enormous part of the mandate a government has to act. I mean, I would hazard as a guess that the Harper government would do considerably more to deal with this problem than it does, but it can't because the public is still sufficiently unaware of the severity and nature of the problem, and they would find themselves accused of this, that, and the other thing, and Supreme Court judges would throw away this and that, and they would render themselves ineffective, and there'd be an election, and then we get somebody like Justin Trudeau, and who, like Obama, certainly appears to be on the other side from all reasonable observation. So, yes, certainly, that's some of my observations from being downtown today. There was defiance, and there was 50,000 people, according to some sources. I think it was a lot more than that, and they were there. They were there for a purpose. So, Baron Bodice, are you here with us?
Yes. Can you hear me?
I very, very quietly. I wonder how is there a
how
way
about
I can turn
now?
You up?
How about now? I just turned up the mic here.
A little bit more, even if you could. Could you turn it up a bit more?
No, it's at the top now, I think.
That's great. That'll do. So, do you have any thoughts on that? And you have a few subjects you wanted to bring to the table?
Well, I just finished looking at all your stuff, the video and all. I don't think we get that kind of turnout at ours, so I'm not sure. I mean, Obama's over in Russia or wherever he is, and I don't know what he said today, but he certainly didn't participate.
That's standard procedure for Obama. Actually, today, of course, remember, I am in the capital, right? So Ottawa is Canada's capital. But we had Harper was there live with his family at the Cenotaph. Princess Anne was there, and she gave a short speech and a dedication. The Cenotaph itself was rededicated. There was the Governor General. I have to say, it was an astonishing all-star cast in terms of politics. There was no leaders of the opposition that I saw. There was no NDP or Liberal representatives, and I think that had they been on board for this, they would have been invited. But it was really quite something to see that all these people had taken. I mean, the Governor General, I guess you'd expect their role was entirely ceremonial. But there was a lot of Princess Anne, too, I guess, but I was surprised that she was there. I mean, I would imagine she lives in England. So people took it very seriously because of what happened here a couple of weeks ago. Yes, it really was. It really was quite something. Now, did you see that Ezra Levant clip?
Yes, I did.
So just to introduce it, either last night or the night before, I think it was last night, Ezra Levant on Sun TV did an expose on a school board where Muslim groups are agitating to allow Muslims to be excused from any kind of commemorative activity having to do with, our Armistice Day, Memorial Day. Really, Ezra just crucified them. He exposed But they were trying to make it look like it was a faith group and trying not to name Islam. But all of the alternative activities for schools that were suggested were entirely Islamic or about celebrating one soldier who was a woman who wore a hijab. I mean, it was just so obvious that it was Muslims who were once again trying to separate themselves and clearly feel themselves to be on the other side, that they weren't here to be part of Canada and Canada's interests. What did you think of that clip?
Well, I found it kind of appalling and schizophrenic, because while Harper is doing his thing, here's the school district going the opposite direction. And this is a major Ontario school district, is that right?
Yes,
school board for a big chunk of Ontario, is that what it is?
Yes, the school board thing is incredibly complicated in Canada, because when the country was formed, we had to do these compromises between the French and the English, and the French were Catholic and the English were Protestant, so they had two basic school boards, what they call a public school board, which is really a Protestant one, and the French school, the Catholic school board, which is wasn't really entirely French, but it was distinctly Catholic, and they're both publicly funded, and then there's a private school system, and then so on and so on. And there's just tons of school boards. But wherever you find Muslims in any kind of numbers, they agitate to break all of our laws. That includes prayer rooms in schools or mosqueterias. The list is endless. And I actually I'm in the middle of some research with some people about the changes that are being made and requested by Muslims across the board and all these school boards across Ontario, which are profound. I mean, they're even illegal. I can't get into it just this early in the game, but there'll be a lot on that coming up soon. So I think what Ezra did was great. Like, it's someone had the courage. If I could get the chat room to work, Red, are you there? Red Fox?
Hi, Vlad, I am.
Do
you have to do? Go into the studio.
I'm in the studio.
You've got promote, episode info, and chat. Click on chat.
Yeah, I did.
And click on open moderator chat in new window and launch chat here, and that'll get you into
It ended up crashing. It's crashing, and it's showing me some strange chat software, 123 Flash Chat, Thanksgiving special offer.
Just try it again.
Yeah, but it won't let me. If I click the chat button, nothing happens. Totally.
That's okay. I have the chat room open on my end.
Oh, you do?
I do.
Oh, terrific. So other people can see it?
Yeah.
So I'm just seeing the strange ad for the software. Because I would like to see the chat room, too. I guess I'll pass you the link for this Ezra clip.
Pass it to me via Skippity Skype, and I'll put it in the chat for you.
Now, there's a whole bunch of really important new news, too. Just before I even give you that, the Al-Nusra Front, which is Islamic State, just went and took today and yesterday, just took an enormous amount of territory from America's official allies, which are the Free Syrian Army. And some pundits are calling this a watershed. They're saying the fact that all this territory. Anyway, they released a video. I'm going to put that in the chat room. Here it is. I'm giving you that link. The link I just gave you, Kel, is a link to a video that the Al-Nusra Front just put up today, which they're showing off the territory that they just conquered right from America's allies, the Free Syrian Army. And let's just say that the geopolitical pundits are calling that very highly problematic, right? Now, let's see if I can even find this. Yeah, now there's some really extraordinary things going on at the BBC too, I think. There we go. So here's the Ezra link that's coming your way now. Okay, so this second link, Red, that's Ezra Levant. And if you want to put it in the chat room, I can't even tell if there's anybody in there. But I really think it's important that people see that. And it's important that we support people like Esther Levant and Sun TV, because there ain't no one else. I mean, there's a Daily Mail in the UK, and I think certain presenters on Fox. But there's an incredible paucity, if I'm using that word right, as a credible absence of journalists that are actually addressing reality these days. It's gotten to the point where I think people turn on the BBC, and BBC says it's raining, and then people run to the window to know what's really going on, because there's no relationship between reality and the BBC. Now, having said that, something major does appear to be happening. Today alone, I've seen two clips on the BBC. One is about Charlene Downs, an entire documentary. Now, I haven't seen the whole clip yet, so I really don't know how they spun it, right? But the fact that they're addressing it at all is, unless they're completely deflecting from reality. And again, I haven't seen it. But I did see the clip about one girl from Rochdale and how the police deliberate. Now, they did say that it was all Asian men. They did say that 11-year-old girls were being forced to sleep with hundreds of Asian men a day. And I mean, in England, everybody understands the word Asian means Muslim, because I'm pretty confident that none of them were Japanese. I would be willing to wage money that none of them were Japanese or Chinese, unless they were Uyghurs, I guess. So the BBC did this thing. Now, what they didn't say, and I think this is still somewhat an attempt at deflection, is they did not say how many of these cops were Muslim or Asian, because the show was about how the police were not only they were not only not doing anything about it, but they were running interference for the rapists and the rape gangs, that the cops were tearing up documents. Now, this isn't, as far as I know, this isn't on YouTube yet, but I can pretty much guarantee it will be sometime in the next few hours. This clip from BBC that was broadcast today showed in Rotham, it showed that the police were tearing up reports, threatening girls to not make reports, and then going off and yucking it up with the rape gang men. Now, the fact that the BBC reported this, I think, may represent a kind of a sea change. It may mean that the BBC recognizes that it was headed for utter and total irrelevance and contempt. Maybe, you know what I mean? Like French Revolution style, eventually, they continued that way. Now, they're not fully, they're not like Pat Condell yet, although they should, right? That's what they should be if you want to face reality. But at least they're starting to report on things which are just completely undeniable, and they're addressing key factors of it, even if they didn't ask the right questions. Who were these cops? Were they also Asian? Is there an Asian conspiracy here? But they didn't hide the fact that it probably was an Asian conspiracy either. I mean, you watch it, anybody who's just been paying even a slight bit of attention would know. So I think that's significant. Baron?
Yes.
Hello? What do you think?
Yes. It was Rochdale, not Rotherham, right? The one you
Rochdale,
were talking about.
Okay, my bad. Yeah.
I think. We're seeing more of this, and I'll tell you something I saw last night on Sky News, in a Sky News article. They were talking about, this was in Manchester, it's also culturally enriched, and some gang of youths attacked a guy, bumped a curb or something, had to get out of his car, and the youths attacked him, and they chased him. And they are described as, three were Asian and one was black. And that's just unusual. Normally you don't see black in a description in the British press. And Asian means Muslim, of course, or Pakistani. But the stuff is coming out more. It's very slow, though. Not much is coming out. But there are other things, that more and more of these rape gang reports are coming out for different cities, and huge numbers of the estimated victims. Since Rotherham, there's more and more of them.
Well, that's for sure. I mean, and before Rotherham, too. I mean, really, like, Rotherham, to me, didn't even strike me as unusual, other than the fact that people bothered to notice it.
So, well, you had an official report. That was what made it unusual. I don't know how that woman protected, what's her name that did the report? I don't know how she protected herself, but because that was what you couldn't do before. You couldn't report this stuff.
That's right.
And yet she did.
You still probably can't. I doubt much has changed. But they are reporting on it, and that's really, really exceptional. By the way, there's another story which I feel is significant, and I'm not even sure why, but it feels like it's significant. The IDF, the Israeli Defense Force, thinks Hamas is planning a very large attack. Now, well, the IDF, they just aren't prone to hysteria. They tend to understate cases. And they definitely don't overreact. If anything, they underreact for reasons I'm sure most people can understand. So they came out today and said that they think Hamas is planning a very large attack. Large IDF and police forces are fanning out to large cities to head off a mega attack. Shin Bet also trying to prevent it. Large IDF locating possible terrorists. Minister of Public Security, the attack. Aronovich instructed police commissioner, et cetera, to call up several reserve battalions of the order of the border police in the wake of the latest terror wave and of the concern that further attacks are imminent throughout Israel. In addition, a full closure may be imposed on Judea and Samaria, what other people call the West Bank, meaning that Arabs will not be allowed into Israeli towns and communities. And a nationwide operation to round up Arabs staying in Israel illegally has also been launched. So if you add that to that document it's making the rounds again. You remember that document? It's a 7-point plan for world conquest by Islam. It was a document that was discovered in a chalet in Switzerland.
Are you talking
so
about the project, the thing that Patrick Poole broke? Yeah,
yes.
You must be.
So
yeah, I remember that.
That's suddenly all over the blogs again, that document, because if you read it, right up to item 5, it is so stunningly added. So it was found, it was discovered, I think, in 2005. And if you read it, it's just absolutely come true. It's like each thing, one after the other, exactly happened, pretty much exactly how they said it was going to happen, including the reformation, item 5, of the restoration of the caliphate. And I believe item 6, I'd have to go back and look at it, was open warfare in the streets, 2015 or 2016, everywhere. And, you know, if you start looking at the news, in the context of that document, unfortunately, the news makes more sense. It adds a greater richness to it. That's certainly something that I think is very problematic, right? So when the IDF comes out and says this, and we're seeing these, and again, I think these attacks in Canada, these two attacks are what I call B-team attacks in the sense that...
Is the IDF talking about more running over people attacks, that kind of attacks?
Well,
or something else?
I scan down, so I'll put the link. I'll pass the link over to Kel, and she can put it in the room as well. It's a worldwide story. I'm being corrected by a listener. The Worldwide Strategy for Islamic Policy document found in 2001. That's actually Yes, that's actually more profound because you think it's. If it was found in 2001, who knows when it was written? But the fact that they predicted in that accurately that far in advance is really quite something. Maybe that particular listener can call in and discuss it. Let's see. Nationwide operation. Prime Minister Netanyahu held an urgent nighttime security consultation after the attacks in Alon Shvut and Tel Aviv, in which two Jews were murdered. But I think it was written in 1982. I'm getting some great sources here. Written in 1982. Now, my guess would be that they wouldn't do that high level of meetings and so on if they were expecting just a couple more people to take a couple more, like to drive over somebody They are raising homes. Yeah, it looks to me like they're expecting something, either a lot more people at once or a larger scale kind of attack. But clearly they're expecting something. Right. So, and I don't think it's going to be any different in Canada. I think we're going to see. Canada is so unbelievably open. We actually have, the thing is, people don't know this yet, but they're going to. Canada actually has one of the worst problems of all the Western nations. It's just that we haven't, Canada's been so open and easygoing about all this stuff that they haven't felt it was in their interest to do a lot of attacks here. In fact, according to a recent CBC report, and remember, CBC is considerably worse than the BBC in terms of protecting Islam. I mean, they're the ones who came up with Little Mosque on the Prairie in a horrific and pathetic attempt to create an image of Islam which has no bearing on the reality of it whatsoever. But the CBC even reported that Canada has the highest per capita jihadi rate of people leaving to go fight with the Islamic State of any country in the world. So that's got to mean something. And, you know, I know something about some of the mosques here in Montreal, Ottawa, Calgary. It really, really serious degree of incitement to jihad and Islamic supremacism and so on and so on. I think when they really decide to get their B team out there. So I just got this then. Palestinian incitement rise, 6 killed last month. Hamas encourages Palestinian population to start a car intifada, a violent uprising using vehicles. They've used their social media accounts to liken vehicles to the missiles launched during Operation Protective Edge and to terrorize the Israeli population. They use cartoons and images to encourage Palestinians to use their vehicles as weapons and to run over as many Israelis as possible. There's actually even massive billboards that they've put up, like on the sides of highways, telling people to do they even had a name for it, but to run them over. Anyway, look, I think we're at just past the halfway mark now, if it's okay with everybody. I think I'm just going to play a song. People can refresh their drinks. And we'll be back in like about 3 minutes. And, there's two people I'm hoping will call in. One is Don, and the other is that person who's been handing me this fantastic and contextually perfect information. You both have the number. I'm going to throw a song on, call in if you like, and join the conversation. Thank you. isn't that just miraculously beautiful music? Like, how can you be unhappy after listening to Traveler's Swing? Anyway, are we back? Is everybody here?
You are so back, and what a great song.
Isn't that a great song? It's just wonderful. Anyway, there's so much more to discuss, but actually, listening to that just wiped it out of my head. If anybody's interested, that song was a type of music called Gypsy Jazz, and it's Django Reinhardt style music, but it's by a contemporary group, and you can hear that tune if you go get the movie or rent the movie or download the movie. Lachodrome, Latcho space Drom. It's a French-made movie about gypsy music across the world, and that's the section from France, because it's actually a type of French gypsy music. Anyway, but I would just mention that because it really is beautiful to listen to. You got to remember what we're fighting for. We're fighting for beauty. We're fighting for music and art and for the freedom to indulge it and to argue about it. And if you look at all these Islamic countries, there's just none of it. You know, Iran just passed a new law. 75 lashes if you have a dog. Think about that. So if you have a pet dog, well, this is purely Quranic, because the Quran says an angel won't visit a house with a dog or a picture in it. So the next thing is going to be pictures. But Iran passed a law. It was a huge fine, too, like a couple of $1,000. And 75 lashes. I'm pretty sure most people, well, I don't know what most people, but a lot of people wouldn't survive 75 lashes. And the ones that do, they'll be bearing those scars for life. That's just for having a dog, you know. We're not talking about a nice system here. Like, this has to be, we're going into times, and more people are admitting it, and people I meet in security services are, you know, once they're content that there's no idiots listening to them, will admit that, yes, we're going into times that are the stuff of history books. This is no small thing, and I think situational awareness is something that everybody in Canada and the Western world is going to have. It's the same kind of situational awareness that you would have on an aircraft if you see somebody wearing an Islamic jihadi uniform, which would typically be a beard, no mustache, a knit cap. It may or may not involve a tunic, the watch on the right wrist, and there's other things I don't know. If you see that uniform, you need to know what that person's ideology is. It is a uniform. It's a uniform that represents an ideology, and it's not in your interest. Situational awareness is important. Now, Baron, you had some specific topic ideas. You wanted to talk about, I think, that interesting segment in the Geert Wilders. He gave a speech recently in Denmark, and it was an all-star cast at this particular meeting, and one of them was Daniel Pipes. And Daniel Pipes and Geert Wilders directly to each other talked about one of the most important, I think I could use the word canards, but let's say points of disagreement would be more accurate, in the entire issue of the Islamification of the Western world, the nature of the problem, and how to deal with it. You had some thoughts on that?
Well, yes, I do. It's very interesting. Geert, we know his opinions. His speech was a good speech, but it's what we've heard from him before, but the debate was remarkable because I haven't heard a discussion about moderate Islam at that high a level in our movement before, or not in a long time anyway. And Daniel Pipes is, of course, the preeminent moderate Muslim believer. He's been that way for ever since I've been paying attention to him. It's the same line that George W. Bush put out back after 9/11, that there was Islam and there was Islamism, and Islamism is the tiny minority of extremists that have hijacked a great religion, blah, blah, blah. And Pipes is a little different, but he does refer to Islamism. You'll read or listen to his speech, you hear Islamism, not Islam. And he's at pains to emphasize that he is interested in encouraging moderate Islam, which some of us don't actually believe exists, including the Turkish former prime minister, now president of Turkey, Erdogan. He doesn't think moderate Islam exists, but Daniel Pipes does. Well, I thought it was interesting that they debated it, and you and I worked on getting it out with subtitles because it was so hard to hear. And it was also 29 minutes into a very long video. So it's out there now, and I would like to see more discussion about this topic all through our movement, because to my mind, the idea of there being a moderate Islam is dangerous. It, in just a few years, we collectively, the West, and you know, different countries at different times, are going to have to make some very hard choices about what they have to do. And I'd rather not get more specific than that, because it will sound like incitement, but bad things are coming down the road at us. And when that time comes and everything's in a turmoil, people like Geert Wilders may well be elected to high office to deal with it. We're getting closer and closer to the moment where people who think like us will actually have influence on policy. And the belief that there is a moderate Islam and that we should somehow help it and encourage it could actually interfere with what really needs to be done, and which it could be the difference between saving our civilization and consigning it to the dustbin of history when the time comes. That's why I think it's important. That's roughly
well,
what I have to say.
Because if you go with that, moderate Islam thing, then what you're really setting up for is kind of detente. And then if anybody's ever read that exceptionally prophetic book by G.K. Chesterton called The Flying In. I haven't actually made it to the end of the book yet. I've made it. It's kind of depressing. It was written in 1914. So it was 100 years ago this year. That book was written 100 years ago, G.K. Chesterton wrote a book about what it would look like if the Western world, specifically England, had to do a kind of detente with Muslims. And how apologists in the British elite circles would be giving these lectures about how Islamic culture and British culture were really so much the same, and that the Western had learned so much from Islam. And if you read it, it's going to really, really, you probably should take an anti-emetic before you sit down with that book, even though it's kind of written partially as humor, which is G.K. Chesterton's style. But I mention it because that I think that concept of a moderate Islam is really setting up for the kind of detente that G.K. Chesterton warned about, which is to say that if you're going to take that route and then you're going to try to set up some kind of compromise to avoid conflict, what you're going to get is slavery. You're going to get the end of freedom, and you're going to end up being just a bunch of other Islamic countries where your children are going to realize there's no percentage in continuing not to be or to be not Muslim. And they're going to end up converting because it's just too much trouble to not convert. And then it's over. And that's how Islam works, frankly. Look at the history of Janissaries and so on. Why they take the children of conquered peoples. Why do they do that? Well, the girls, we don't want to say because we know. But the boys are either forced to convert and learn weapons, and then they make them, and that's happening. Islamic State's doing that now. They're the mainstream media has not yet. I haven't heard anyone mention this, but if you read, what's the name of that site we like? ANSA, ANSI.
ANSA and ANSAMED. It's two different parts of the same agency, news agency, Italian.
Well, it's very, very good because they at least report on what they see, but they don't necessarily understand the full meaning of it. And I've read reports there where they talk about how they're taking boys from villages and cities that Islamic State conquers, and they're making them study Quran and teaching them weapons. They're little kids here. And so they're going to make them attack their own, because it's Janissaries, traditional Islamic modus operandi, where they're going to make people's children be the agent of the death of their own families, their own culture, their own heritage. And this goes right back to the Ottoman Empire, a scant 100 years ago, and then going back even further. This is what they did. There's no ethical limit to the kind of horror that that Islam will do in order to be, because the only thing, you know, I was thinking the other day about Sharia law, how much I've read about it and different people I've interviewed that are experts. And it really does come down to Sharia law. All the principles in it can be derived from one idea, which is anything that advances the cause of Islamic supremacy and the destruction and death of non-Muslims is, there you go. That's what, that, then it's okay. And anything that works against it is not okay. And so the books and books and books and codifications and debates that people have about it are all essentially meaningless. And you can see that in Mohammed's own instructions. And you can see that in the people who, and that hence abrogation. You can see that in the people that did 9/11, who went drinking to a strip joint, for all we know, had a ham sandwich the night before, which is totally okay. It did not prevent them from being martyred. You look at the Christian world, and you look at some fables and stories and examples of how people who sacrificed themselves for Christianity but still didn't get to be buried in consecrated ground because they violated some tenet of Christianity. It was politically a bad move for Christianity to do that, but at least it was consistent to their own theology. The Muslims' theology is quite different. It's purely pragmatic. And there's an irony there, because while they pretend to be so incredibly pious and so incredibly religious and so whatever, I hesitate to use the word spiritual, but let's say devout, and it's all about Allah and Allah's rules, in truth, at the end of the day, it's utterly pragmatic. Does this advance the cause of Islamic supremacy? Then you can do anything you want. To quote, I think it's Quran, a day in the battlefield fighting in Allah's way is worth a lifetime of good works. Because that's
all.
And
it's the same as communism. It's exactly the same rules as in communism. Anything that advanced the world revolution was acceptable. You know, murder, mayhem, robbery, whatever. Mass destruction, mass slaughter, anything that advanced the world revolution was okay. Lying especially.
Somebody wants to ask you a question. And yes, you may ask the parent a question. Certainly you don't even have to ask, just go ahead and ask. And I believe also we have somebody in the chat room. If I could just see it, then I could No, I can do that. But
it's still giving you the wheel. Yeah. Blog Talk Radio is overwhelmed tonight. They have a lot of shows going on, and the bandwidth is creating havoc for many, many people. And that's why we're getting the wheel. I had the chat room open, though, so no worries there, Vlad. And you do have a COG and TP Nani joining you in the chat room. With the guests as well. And yes, I'm the one with the question. And Ned, this is for you. You brought up the issue of the moderates, and I actually did a show about this with my fellow host Tim Burton on Monday about the moderate Muslims. I got this article from Robert Spencer's Jihad Watch, and it's entitled, "Too Many Muslims Have a Group Loyalty, an Inflamed Sense of Victimhood." And this comes on the heels of Australia's Attorney General, George Brandis, announcing that they are going to take new measures to combat terrorism. And he had a town hall meeting, and the town hall meeting was stacked with so-called moderates, and they were attacking him, and they were playing the victim card in that they were saying, well, these measures, you're just attacking Muslims, you're just attacking us, we're regular people, but you're attacking us. But the thing is that what they don't understand is that we're attacking Islam, and if you are a follower of the evil green book called the Quran, then, you know, so sorry, you know, pass go and do not collect your $200 because you are a contributor. Essentially, what this article was saying is that it's not the outright lesser jihad movement that has to be of concern to us. It is that of the moderate, and I'm wondering that. What is your take on that? And
I absolutely agree.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, what we are facing now is the appearance of the super moderates, and this is the most dangerous of all. I know Vlad has been looking at this too. When there are now Muslims showing up who are talking, there's one in Austria, talking about how it's necessary to reform Islam and take the violence out of the Quran and stuff like that, which is, of course, is one of the minimum demands that people on our side have been issuing for years. But it's quite possible the moderates have been claiming for decades that Islam is a peaceful religion, and now it's becoming clear that it's not, because ISIS is making it clear to everybody. And so they're backing up to their next defensive position, which is, oh yes, Islam is a violent religion, but that's just because it hasn't been reformed yet. We're going to need to reform it. And that's a protection of Islam, and it will protect it, if it's successful, protect it long enough to get through this time and increase their numbers, which is what they're doing all through the West, until they can have the superior numbers and dictate whatever terms they want, in which case they can return to what the Quran, the Hadith, and the Sunnah tell them, and which won't have changed, even though they will have pretended to interpret them differently for a while. And that's the great danger. And one of the dangers of believing in moderate Islam is being willing to believe what Muslims tell us, when we know by their own codified law that they are required to lie to us to protect their faith. It's mandatory for them to lie to infidels to protect Islam. They can say anything they want about it when it's threatened, in order to protect it and get it through the time of threat. And that's what we're facing. That's my opinion.
Oh, thanks, Ned, for that. And Bigfoot just joined the chat room too, as well, Vlad. And he said, remember how the civil rights leaders used to reach out to the moderate segregationist? Me neither. Very, 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 very good.
Or the moderate Nazis, and Reagan wasn't too fond of the moderate communist either. Look, there's something I've made a personal commitment to myself to say every chance I get whenever I'm doing any kind of show. And so I'm going to just take this opportunity to do it now. I'll be brief, though. And I think that one of the things that stands in our way of getting further faster is our thirst for novelty. I think it's a Western disease. We are so used to new episodes and new movies and new technologies, and we've become novelty has become a kind of drug. It didn't really work out the way Alvin Toffler. I think in some ways Alvin Toffler's Future Shock model, which was a really interesting book. I remember reading it back when I was a kid. It was interesting what he said, but it actually worked out to be somewhat closer to something like Huxley might have said, but didn't. That our thirst for novelty and our need for constant newness it's become an inhibitor in terms of the jihad, because this isn't going to go away. And look at Ebola is already gone from the news, right? 2 weeks. I'm sure the disease hasn't been stopped. I'm sure it's still growing in numbers, but it's off the news, right? It's already like, who remembers the Ebola? Who remembers the Ebola? That was days ago. And as a consequence of this thirst for novelty and our inability to focus on what a long-term threat is like, it also needs to be said that freedom of speech only matters for one thing, and that is to be able to say whatever you want to say about any kind of authority. And I think that is especially true for religious authority. Now, whether people are religious or not, it doesn't matter. If you want to protect yourself from tyranny, you have to have freedom of speech. And somehow the left, which used to be the people that were the most strident about freedom to speak against religious authority and political authority and freedom of speech in general and, you know, raising trouble for the status quo, they're the ones now who are forcing us all into a kind of animal farm kind of inability to speak against what's obviously the problem. We cannot criticize Islam, and Islam is the thing most worthy of criticism, and that's coming from the left, and it's really shocking that the current left is truly fascist. Well, fascism is left anyway, but in terms of how it's popularly thought of. So I just wanted to say, like, the only kind of freedom of speech that matters is the freedom to criticize political and religious authority, and the only way you're going to be able to keep it is to use it. And it doesn't matter what people say you can say, and it doesn't matter if people say it's rude, and it doesn't matter if people say it's politically incorrect or it's racist. You have to do it, because history can turn on a dime. History can turn on the pivot of a heel. You know? It really can. If people just use that freedom of speech, no matter what you're told you can say and can't say, if enough of you do it, it becomes the new thing. It's like a kind of herd immunity, like a vaccine. Once you vaccinate enough people, the disease won't take, right? It's called herd immunity. It's why everybody doesn't have to get the flu shot, just like, what, 60% or 70% or 40%, whatever it is, enough to get what's called herd immunity so that the disease can't spread, because it's not in a high enough target-rich environment for the disease to really spread the way Ebola does in Africa, once you've immunized a certain number of people. And the same thing's true here. If enough people stand up and are critical of Islam, it could be with ridicule, it could be with rudeness, or it could be classy and it could be informed, then I think there should be lots of all of the above, right? It could be with funny T-shirts. It could be the same thing people did to the church in order to reduce its power, as it's popularly thought of in the Renaissance, right? If enough of us do this, we'll get herd immunity, and this thing will go away, because it cannot take the light of day. The biggest problem we have is allowing Islam to take over, and people don't know how bad it is in Canada. Like, I'm just starting to get a glimmer because of long conversations that I've had with for one person, Mark Labouy from Pointe à Basse School. Now, anybody who hasn't seen that site needs to go. It's Pointe, Pointe, Bascule, Bascule, .ca, and that's a very important site. I'm not going to call it a blog, it isn't. It's a website which very, very meticulously analyzes all the data that he gets. He doesn't publish anything there that he won't take into a court of law and defend its accuracy, its veracity, and its importance. And not that a court would want the importance, but, you know, he's constantly being threatened with suits and so on by Islamic groups because he exposes them, and he knows who's who and what's what in terms of the mosques and Islamic groups. It is the source to go to, and Canada is far more serious here than most people realize. And Mark is one of the people I've been talking to, and also people who are former members of major school boards have been telling me what's been going on. It's quite terrifying, and we're going to have to not be afraid. We're going to have to say things. And you know, it's something that we actually can do, and it will make a difference. Anyway, we're now we're 1 minute over time. So I just like to take this opportunity to thank Kel Red Fox for doing all the technical stuff and arranging this show and letting us do this on her time, on her Blog Talk Radio time. To Baron Bodicey at gatesofvienna.net, and people owe it to themselves and to their liberty to read that site every day. That's gatesofvienna.net. To CB Sashenka, who's been sending me information through Skype during this show so I can be on top of some of the issues we've been talking about. And everybody else who's called in or listening online, I can't see the chat room. I can't name you, but thank you for being here. And we're back next Tuesday at 8:30 Eastern. I don't know, is it daylight or is it standard? I think it's daylight savings in the winter. Anyway,
I'm always confused.
No, we're on standard time.
Yeah.
Well, it's standard, so it's daylight in the summer. I just don't get that. Okay, so Eastern Standard Time, 8:30 next Tuesday. We'll see you all there. And there's a button here that starts the closing thing. I know there is because I was told there is. Kel?
Mm-hmm.
Where the button is? Is there a button to do the closing thing?
Oh, for the closing song? I've got it for you. No worries.
Oh, there it is. I see it. I can push it right down. Thank you all.
There you go.
See you next